Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Original cast album of Peter Pan on compact disc.
Oh, really?
You know, for those of you who's old.
I'll get it.
Yeah, it's good. In fact, they've got a whole bunch of original cast albums that are, well, some of them were so old they came out on 78s. They're now coming out on compact discs.
I wish you wouldn't say it like that because all my records were on 78.
I'm sorry.
I mean, really? What a way to start the morning. They're so old that now.
It's 12 minutes after 11 o'clock on WGN in Chicago. All right, before we talk to Debbie Reynolds about the book, let's talk to Kathy Worthington about November the 4th and all of the exciting things that happened on this date in history. Oh, famous marriage today.
Oh, then you must mean Abraham Lincoln.
Of course.
Right?
Mary and Abe.
In 1842.
Wasn't this the day they tied the knot?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, that's all?
That's all I've
got. Oh, you didn't know how depressed he was?
No.
No, really?
About the marriage?
Yeah. Abraham Lincoln was so depressed and worried about getting married, his friends actually kept sharp objects away from him for the 2 weeks
then
preceding.
Why did he do it?
I don't know.
Well,
anyway,
okay.
Sorry, I don't have the answer to that.
Well, in 1879, humorist Will Rogers was born in Oogala, Oklahoma.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
This was the day that they found the entrance to King Tut's tomb back in 1922. Okay, let's see. Was there anything else? Birthdays.
Yeah, birthdays. Walter Cronkite, 72 years old today.
Art Carney is 70.
Actor Cameron Mitchell. The name is really
familiar. TV people would remember him from High Chaparral, I guess.
Oh.
Debbie, did you ever work with Cameron Mitchell?
Well, Cameron's a wonderful dramatic actor, you know. His face is recognizable to everybody.
Yeah.
She's saying she doesn't know who he is. See, she's too young. You know what I mean?
Aren't
those old records.
I remember you and Tammy and the Bachelor. I loved that movie.
She
doesn't have earphones on.
No, Debbie, you don't have earphones on. But
well, Cameron Mitchell.
Hold those up to your ears and you can hear.
He was in every Western.
Yeah.
He did a lot of Westerns. And he played a lot of villains.
Yeah.
And now he has two children that are coming right up. Camille Cameron. She's going to be a star.
I didn't know that.
Isn't that exciting?
Oh.
A dramatic Shakespearean actress.
Who else's
birthday?
You never know what you're going
to... I love to know how old everyone's getting.
Okay. Oh, this will really make you old. Annie, Andrea McArdle, you know, who was the original Annie on Broadway?
Right.
Is 24.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 13 or 14.
She's catching up with
24.
Us.
24.
Hey, Ralph Macchio, you know, the Karate Kid, he's 27 today.
And Martin Balsam is 69.
Oh, good actor, too, yeah.
Another one I don't recall, Doris Roberts, is 58 today. Who is Doris Roberts?
I don't know
Who
Doris
is Doris Roberts?
Roberts?
She's an, oh, wait a minute. Yep,
58 is not old.
Here it is. She, on Remington Steele, she played Mildred Krebs. But see, I never watched Remington Steele.
I don't know.
Yeah, I missed that one.
Can't catch every TV show. You know, it's too
what
many.
What was the show that you liked that
She's
Debbie
She's got to put her earphones on or she's
oh,
not going to hear
you.
It. Oh,
okay.
You can.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, Tammy and the Bachelor. I loved that
this
movie.
This you know?
I saw several times. And remember you singing the song?
What,
I hear the whippoorwill.
Oh. Listen,
whispering above, Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's in love.
No,
you've got all these Tammys in here.
I was just getting into the business in the early 50s when they brought a record into the station one day. It was a little 45 on MGM, or maybe it was even a 78. Sorry, Debbie.
I think it was.
But no, it was Debbie Reynolds and Carlton Carpenter.
It was a little bitty kind.
Doing Abba Dabba Honeymoon.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That was the first time I remember hearing about you.
Oh, absolutely. That was my first movie. Abba Dabba was 2 Weeks with Love, which was before Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, yeah.
What
and the unsinkable Molly Brown. You were really good in that. Boy.
Boy, am I glad you're here.
By the way, do you know there's a great story in the book, though, about the unsinkable Molly Brown? In fact, there's a lot of great stories. Some of the parts that we remember you most for were the hardest things in the world for you to get. You know, I mean...
Oh, yeah. Well, they didn't really want me in Molly Brown. They
can
had
you imagine that? They did not want her in the unsinkable Molly
Brown. I thought
it
was made for you.
Oh, absolutely. When I saw the play in New York, I said, oh, I have to do this. But they cast Shirley MacLaine in the role and Robert Goulet in the other part. But then Shirley was in a lawsuit with this producer named Hal Wallace. And if they had taken Shirley, they might have never been able to release the movie. So I had asked if I could even test or read or anything. And they said, no, you're... you're too short for the part. So I quoted Helen Hayes, and I said, how short is the part? And when Shirley couldn't do it, you know, when there was a problem, then they took second best, which was me. But, of course, I thought I was first best, you know. I loved doing that role.
You could tell.
We're coming back next year. I've never done it on the stage. Harve Presnell, who was my leading man in the movie, we're coming to Chicago next year and do The Unsinkable Molly Brown on stage.
All right.
Wow.
Fun, fun, fun.
As a matter of fact, if you want to put a little note down in your notebook, friends, for those of you out at the Paramount Art Center, actually, I've got a real date here. Do you know that on Friday, December the 9th, at 8 o'clock, that's where you're going to be?
No.
Yeah. Watch
where
what
am I going to be? Oh, you're right.
Yes. Seriously, Friday.
Oh, my goodness, you're right.
Friday, December 9th, 8 o'clock, the Paramount Theater hosts Debbie Reynolds in an evening of music and comedy with Harve Presnell.
That's right.
And
what fun.
Is this The Unsinkable, though, when you are you going to do the whole show?
No, we're not going to do the play. We're going to do songs from Annie Get Your Gun and from Annie and from Molly Brown. And I do a whole act. You know, I do all imitations. I do Zsa Gabor, Barbara Streisand, and Dr. Who's.
I didn't know you did imitations.
Oh, yeah. I've always done impressions. You know, I just don't make that my career, but I do, you know, I do my West and Betty Davis, anyone you'd like. Who would you like me to be today? Catherine Hepburn, we could always do. Catherine, it's early, but you know we could try.
You know, you said in the book that somebody that really inspired you, I always thought, was one of the most entertaining people in the world, and that was Betty Hutton.
Oh, yes. Well, I started out, I wanted to be a gym teacher, and I entered this contest. I used to do record impressions. You know, you put the record on, then you mouth, and that was Betty Hutton. I never sang. I just did the record. But that's how I got into movies, was winning this contest where I did that.
Yeah, right.
So Betty Hutton was like my dream, you know, and then I was always sad that her career didn't go on and on and on because her talent was so great.
Yes, she was good. Yeah.
Oh, you're speaking of sad. I just finished the book last night. And I got to the part where you talked about one of my favorite all-time actresses, a great Agnes Moorehead.
Oh, I loved Agnes.
But Debbie, I didn't realize that the last few months or years of her life were not that happy for her.
Well, she had cancer, you know, and she died very hard, you know. And she did the play Gigi right up to the end. In fact, we took her from the stage right to the train. She chose to keep working and pretending to herself, really, that she wasn't that ill. And we were not aware that it was that critical. And of course, I was left to take care of her estate. And it was horrendous because her lawyer stole everything from her mother, who was 97 at that time and lived to 104. And absolutely, this lawyer just got everything. Shows you why we women should be more knowledgeable.
You mentioned a figure, by the way. Will you set the record straight? You mentioned a figure in the book that either was taken from you or you lost of $21 million.
Well, my husband lost $21 million of his money, $7 million of my money, and then everything I earned for 13 years on top of that. So
you want to talk to Doris Day. Have you talked
to
her about that?
Oh, yes. I'm very good friends of Doris Day. And her husband did the same thing to her, only mine was actually still living. Her husband, Marty Melcher, he went, and they were married, oh, my gosh, you know, 25, 27, 8 years, whatever. And he was always terrific and very nice to everybody. He adopted her son, you know, Terry. And he just goes out one day, he sat on the sand at the beach and died, had a heart attack, and no one has ever found her money. $30 million, Doris Day, her husband just took and disappeared and was always sort of planning, evidently, to leave her. But he died, but the money died with him,
woman.
You know. She's never found the money.
Oh.
The lawyer got the money again, you see. We must study law, girls. Girls, let's all become lawyers. Marry some man that's a jerk like we are.
You're out of debt now. I mean, have you paid
Oh, yes, thank God. Well, it took me 10 years to pay all these debts off, because when my husband lost everything, he still owed millions, so I had to pay off his debts, because in California, it's community property, you know.
It works both ways.
Well, I suppose I've never really experienced that the other way.
Debbie Reynolds is here. The book is called My Life, it's published by Morrow, and we're going to talk more about it. Would you like to join in? The number is 591-7200. And Debbie, very frankly, talks about her relationship with her children. You know what I thought was very touching? And in fact, maybe you can just share a little bit. We don't want to give away the whole book. But
well, no, anything you want to talk about. I think it's important for women to know the book is a lot about what we go through.
It sure is. Well, you know, when you were having your problems with Harry Carl, he's the guy that ran off with the 7 million friends, plus 21 of his own. But when you were having problems with Harry and your daughter Carrie was at home, she naturally was aware of what was going on. And those little things that she would write to you, that's very touching.
Well, Carrie is very gifted as a writer. In fact, she just was given the Penn Award for her book, a novel called Postcards from the Edge. So I was very proud of her. But even young, you know, this was when Carrie was 13, she wrote me a little, a note, you know, it was a long note about how she really felt that I was very unhappy and that I shouldn't stay in a marriage where I was staying for the children that they knew, she especially knew.
Yeah.
Todd was younger. And when I left, then Carrie was 15, Todd was 14. I really had to leave because I had my stepdaughter, my stepson, and my two children. And Harry, my husband, had just really given up. He would just stay in bed, and he wouldn't admit that we had no money. And shortly thereafter, they took the houses, they took the cars, everything. The banks took everything. There was nothing left. And he just wouldn't face reality. I said to him, I said, you know, Harry, you're like an ostrich. You stick your head in the sand, but what's up? I mean, you have to face life. You can't just ignore it. It's not going away.
You know what's interesting is you think of Debbie Reynolds and you think of the star, the Las Vegas star, the movie star, the stage star. You think she has everything in the world. You paint a picture on one page of the book that is almost unbelievable. They're in a car and they go by the Hillcrest Country Club where, you know, that was the place where everybody went. And they get a flat tire or the car breaks down or something, and they won't even let her in the front door to make a phone call to get help.
Now, my husband, I let him keep, at the divorce, I could have taken that membership away because he had nothing. And I wanted him to have his old age where he would at least have a place to go, which is this fabulous country club. And I had been going there for 15 years. And the car broke down because I had this old beat-up car. This is after I left Harry, you know. And we weren't divorced, of course, but anyway, the car just puttered out, and I had Carrie and Todd, and I don't know where we were going, but it was somewhere over by Fox Studio near this country club. And I said, well, we'll walk over there. And this doorman name was George that I know 15 years, and we walked over, left the car because it wouldn't even run, and I walked up to George, and I said, oh, hi, George. How are you, dear? I'd just like to use the phone if you don't mind. He said, oh, but I do mind. You're not allowed in here. You would be disturbing to Mr. Carl.
Now, some people would say you were being kind. Other people would say you were being stupid.
Stupid. I think I was being stupid. Looking back, I really wanted to do what God, I feel, says, do unto others. And I've tried to do that, but I think I turned my cheeks so far that
I'd say a few people took advantage, Debbie. The book is published by Morrow, Debbie, My Life, Debbie Reynolds. By the way, we mentioned daughter Carrie a little while ago and the little notes that she used to write to her mom, especially when she was aware that Debbie and Harry Carl weren't getting along too well. You're very honest about your relationship with Carrie, but it certainly had its ups and downs. Do you talk now? Are you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think every mother has a problem. Well, not every time, hopefully, but sometimes mothers have problems with their daughters because it's like an identity crisis. It's even more so if the mother is like myself, a celebrity. My daughter had to, when she was in grammar school, would go to school and the teacher would call her Debbie. And I went to school, I said, look, you don't call the other children by their parents' first name. Well, she said, I know, but, you know, Debbie, I've known you so long, and I keep looking at the child, and she looks like you, so I call her Debbie. I said, please, do you understand that you're stripping her of her own self-identity? It is wrong what you're doing. So I took her out of that class. But as Carrie grew up, really, we had a problem, especially with the end of my second marriage, because Carrie really felt that I was weak in that marriage and that I should have left sooner and that I should have survived better. You know, she really wanted me to be a bit tougher. I thought I was tough just to get through it. But from about age 16, I think that Carrie and I had a lot of problems because I was still very strong with her. I made her finish going to school. She had to go to London. She had a wonderful chance at this marvelous school called Central, which is like RADA. It's a dramatic academy there. It's brilliant. So she went for 2 years. She didn't want to go, even though she won the audition. Hmm. She did want to go, then she won the audition, then she wanted to come home and lounge around Beverly Hills. I said, you can't do that. You just can't be like a lot of those kids that are too rich, too spoiled, and what are you going to do with your life? So Now, in looking back, she says, you were right, Mother. But we have gone through a great deal together. And now, Carrie, of course, is a full star, a wonderful writer. And we're, like, the last 3 years, since Star Wars, because she was now Debbie Reynolds' daughter, but now I'm Princess Leia's mother.
Put those earphones on. Somebody
okay,
wants
we're
to
ready.
Talk to you. Hi, Jack.
Good morning.
Good morning.
To me, it sounds like the movie The Unsinkable Molly Brown, even though it wasn't meant to be, was written about your life.
I think you're right.
I have a very, very treasured memory of, I'll tell you how many years ago, 32 years ago.
Whoa.
I went backstage at the Oriental Theater, and you and Carlton Carpenter were there, and this was during the Abba Dabba times.
By the way, there's a picture in the book of that is great.
Is there?
Yeah.
And I mean, I was a senior, I think I was a junior or senior in high school.
Right.
And I went backstage, and you took time, you spent time with me, we stood there, we talked. You gave me your autograph and an autograph book, which I still have and treasure.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I was 17.
Well, that's about the same age I was, so we're both, what, 26, 27?
You got it right. Thank you, Jack.
Well,
thanks
for calling.
Oh, okay.
We know that Carrie Fisher is doing well. How's Todd? How's your son?
Oh, he's wonderful. He's like this little angel that appeared in our lives. You know, he just loves Carrie and his mommy, and he has no... You know, imagine having a sister as strong as Carrie and me, a mother, and he's just...
It's kind of tough on the kid.
Yeah, he's so special. First of all, he's very religious, and that just shines through, that he looks after everybody, as a matter of fact.
You know, you tell a story in the book, and I never heard it before or read it before, and I wondered if somehow, if you don't mind me saying this, that you guys hushed it up. And that's the time the kid shot himself when you were living in New York.
I was doing Irene, the play in New York, and I'd left my husband, and things were really awful. And one night I came home from the theater, and it was about 12:31 in the morning. We were watching A Place in the Sun. I'll never forget it, because Shelley Winters was being drowned by Montgomery Clift.
Oh, yeah.
And as she's going under, screaming at him, my son is playing with this prop gun. I thought it was a prop gun. And he pointed at me, and he pointed it at my little dog, Killer. And I said, don't do that, Todd. He says, well, it's not a real gun. Mother, and the next minute I hear a bang, a thump, and he just turned white, and this blood shot all over the room. He shot his leg. You know, the whole kneecap was exposed. This is 1 a.m. I have on my makeup. I wore wigs in Irene that were painted red, so my hair was painted red on the sides. All this garbage makeup on, a robe, no clothes, slippers. Blood is going everywhere. He's turning green. I don't know what to do. I'm sobbing. I'm looking at this. Finally, my Girl Scout training came to my brain. I said, a tourniquet. I ran in the hall, and I tore up a sheet, you know, and I go, and I tie his leg up. Now I get on the phone. I'm sobbing, and an answering service I had at the time. I didn't know anyone in New York. No doctor. Where do you go? A hospital? Where? And it's 1 a.m. So I'm sobbing in the phone, and I said, my son shot himself, and I don't know where to go. This woman said, please stop crying, Debbie. You mean Todd shot himself? She said, oh, I've always loved Todd and you, dear. Oh, and so she tells me she calls a cab. This cab arrives. I'm on the second floor. So I have Todd in a fireman's hold over my back, and I'm going. Now, mind you, I have on a robe, red hair painted, and this crummy makeup. My eyelashes are off. My hair is sticking everywhere. I got him down the stairs, and this taxi driver took him. I had to release the tourniquet so blood goes all over the place again, then tie it up again. And I ran upstairs and I grabbed my Nancy Reagan dress, I call it. It was a brown dress with the buttons, you know, very serious looking dress. And I still have on my slippers now, you know. My hair is all painted red. We get in the cab, we go to the hospital. Now, in the meantime, they reported there was a gunshot. Now, so there's 5 Columbos there with raincoats and hats, you know, saying, hey, a lady. And now they don't know my name. They don't know Debbie Reynolds. First of all, my hair is painted. I look like a schlep, a bag lady in the Nancy Reagan dress. I'm in the lobby of now. It's emergency. There's nobody there. There was nobody there. I said, well, you have to wheel him into emergency. Well, you have your insurance. I had my wallet. I didn't have. Luckily, I cashed a check that day. So I just took out $500 and I put it on the thing. I said, wheel him in. So we get into this emergency room, and a young intern doctor comes. He starts to clean the wound. You know, it's just a terrible mess. Columbos are all out there waiting to arrest me because they thought I shot my son. In fact, it's the only time Eddie Fisher ever called. He said, hey, I read you shot Todd. I said, it's amazing what it took for you to call.
Yeah.
Well, that was
you survived.
That was that story. Well, the cab driver that took us over saved the rag. About 4 years later, I'm in New York, and a taxi man picks me up. And he looks back in the mirror and he said, "Hey, aren't you Debbie?" I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "I'm the guy that carried Todd into the hospital."
You're kidding.
Here's the rag. He opens up the little glove compartment. He's got this old, you know, rag.
Can you imagine? Here's a cab driver who, when he has a stranger out of town, he says, "Hey, you know what I got in my glove compartment? See this? That's Todd Fisher's blood." Do you ever see Eddie at all? Do you have any contact with
him?
No,
the children do. You know, they call. Oh, sure. They're wonderful children. I didn't raise the children to dislike Eddie. He's their father, and you can't raise your children. There shouldn't be any anger or animosity. The fact that I'm not close to Eddie, there's reasons why, and I have no reason to seek him out. But the children do call, and I would always want them to call.
But he's certainly not going to be very happy with your rather frank discussion of his sexual prowess, or lack of.
Well, I didn't like his book either, so, you know.
Okay, well.
I told the truth, and no, he probably won't like it, but frankly, Scarlett...
It's 10 minutes before 12.